Steve Boyle in studio this morning for Greg O'Connor. Joining me in the County National Bank studio, 64th District State Representative Julie Alexander. Good morning, Julie. Hold on, I got to turn your mic on. Now say good morning.
Good morning,
That
Steve.
Works better that time. Yeah, it's good to have you in. It's lovely to get a weekly update from the state government from you. Mike Shirky's made himself available to us quite frequently as well, so hopefully everybody's staying a little bit more informed. And there's a lot of things happening, as you said. You guys are back in Lansing.
Yes, we were there all this last week. It was a very productive week. We needed to wrap up last year's budget, right? So that we knew we had a significant deficit, and in fact, $490 million with a $460 million adjustment was needed. So we, in a bipartisan manner, working with the administrative office, put that all together using a variety of funds, absolutely no tax increase when we are looking at this year's budget. We used federal dollars. We modified with some cuts and also some of the reserves we already had in place. So that was very productive. We have that piece done now. We need to look forward to this next budget year.
Well, yeah, and when hearing about that budget adjustment or, you know, whatever you did to come through and get the mm-hmm. current year budget settled, they mentioned the state's rainy day fund. Give us a little more detail on I guess how much money you can look at being available there and what would be viewed as a rainy day and when you guys would feel like you can access that.
Absolutely. That's a great question, and I think we need the history behind it. Uh-huh. When Governor Snyder came into office, there was no rainy day fund, that budget stabilization, and he built it. We as legislators approved year after year to put a small portion of our budgets in that fund, and for times like this when it is a priority. And I think it's more just discretion when it is needed, how much is needed, and finding that healthy balance. Steve, in so many ways, it's a lot like your family budget. There are times you need to have those dollars set aside and be able to access them when you need them to move forward. And I would like to point out that there seems to be some inaccurate information going around. The governor did not cut the state police funding. Those dollars for correction officers in the Department of Corrections, no cuts were made, although it appears to be a state cut or a budget cut. They were federal dollars that were then replacing our state dollars.
So while it did kind of get cut from the money coming from state revenues, it was replaced with federal revenue dollars.
Absolutely.
And so no actual cut to funding, just a different revenue source.
Exactly.
And I did see that same thing on social media at some point, whether it was last night or early this morning. And so good to have some clarification on that, because no need to be unnecessarily critical of the governor when there's no actual issue.
Well, we need to have accurate information out there. And, mm-hmm. and as you started the conversation this morning, it's important that people have accurate information. And I received a handful of text and Facebook messages on that issue the last couple of days, just looking for clarification. And it's always better to have accurate information from the source. And if I don't have an answer, we're happy to get that for you.
Sure. And so buttoning up the current year budget, the conversation always next goes to, but what about next year? Because the expectation is for multiple billion dollars worth of deficit again next year.
Exactly. So now that we have that piece wrapped up and negotiations have finished there, then we will move forward with those conversations. We will be, you know, back in Lansing here very shortly, and a little bit of in-district time. Again, while we are in district working for the citizens, other committee members, our appropriations chair, they are all still in Lansing working on those details, figuring out what our revenue is going to be. Because mm-hmm. it's hard to plan for this next year's budget unless you know what the revenue source is coming in.
And I guess that's still kind of in flux as we figure out what phase of reopening we'll get into and stuff like that, to understand, you know, where the tax revenue sources are going to be coming from. I
Absolutely.
Guess.
You know, to that point, one of the pieces of legislation that passed nearly unanimously in both the House and the Senate, right now there's an executive order that states if you need a deferment on your property taxes, that you can have that. That's in the executive order. So we as legislators were codifying that executive order. In other words, just putting it into law that if property taxes needed to be delayed, during this pandemic that that is an option for a family. However, the governor did not sign that. She vetoed that. So again, going back to the conversations, what do we do about that? What do we do with that? Those are conversations that are still happening.
Okay. But you're working on it.
We're working on it. There's a lot of issues going, a lot of moving parts, but I think one of the top priorities I'm hearing from Jackson residents and individuals and families, the return to learn plan. What does school look like for the fall? There's a lot of uncertainty, but we did have a very productive week in Lansing in regard to the return to learn plan. And I think what's interesting to point out, Steve, is that there are many, many similarities between the legislator's plan and the governor's plan. There are differences, but there are also similarities. So we were able to move that out of the House this last week, return to learn. It will be heading over to the Senate this next week, and then we will come back the following week and vote on that again with any modifications that might have been made in the Senate.
So this is the House's return to learn plan.
Yes, the legislator's plan, and the two ways that it differs from the governor's plan, it actually gives more flexibilities to the school district. We believe that our school district should be able to decide how and when the students return to school. The governor's plan allowed one of three different plans, and they were based on geographic reasons, regions. The second piece in the way in which it differs is we give more options to parents. We know that when schools open, in our plan, it mandates that K-5 schools must be open for instruction. It is a parent's choice whether they want to send their K-5 kids to school. But we did put that mandate in there. Again, now this package will go over to the Senate. It could be modified, and then it'll come back to us. But we feel very strongly that distant learning is a major challenge for children, for small children, younger children. And we want to make sure that they are provided the best educational opportunities. And we see this as a piece of it. Again, if a parent chooses not to send their young child, again, that is their choice. So those are two ways in which the plans differ. But some of the similarities, there are four similarities in the return to plan. Again, looking at the difference between what the legislators came up with and the governor's plan. One is the benchmark testing. So benchmark testing is not the M-STEP. That is the summative test. Benchmark testing is done every day in the classroom. You offer a lesson, you figure out, did the students learn, master those objectives? So it can be very informal. We also, as legislators, want to make sure that the school districts can use what they've already been using. So it's less formal than the once a year testing on this date and time in the seat. So the similarities between the governor's plan and ours, the benchmark testing, also the online learning plan is very similar. Another piece is the flexible calendar. We know in our Jackson community, we've been starting school prior to the Labor Day. We've had to ask for that exemption every single year. It makes sense for our community. It's been working for our community, and we are on board with that flexible calendar. And then the final piece, athletics. We strongly believe, and so does the governor, that school districts should be working with the local health departments to establish measures to return safely to those extracurricular activities. But I think what I believe the most in our plan, it's safe, it's sensible, it's reasonable, and it's empowering families and districts for that flexibility that I think is needed.
Well, Julie, the main concern I think most people express when they have a concern about schools reopening in the fall is safety with coronavirus. So, I mean, is it something that's in the plan requiring certain PPE or safety procedures, or is that something that, does that something you guys have laid out, and what can people expect from that?
That's a great question, Steve, and that was a large part of our conversation amongst our caucus this week. So as we sit and talk about the legislative package, what we want it to look like, there were some that wanted a mandate of the PPE, of the plexiglass separating the teachers from the students and this and that, and there are others in our caucus that were not comfortable with that. They couldn't get behind that. So the compromise that we reached in the package was that it may be available if needed, but everyone needs to be working with their local health department. Now, as I mentioned, the health department, one other concern that some of the legislators had is that it's a balance, that it's still the control of that local school board to make those decisions in conjunction. In collaborating with the health department, that's another piece of it.
What, if any, input did teachers unions or any teacher groups have in what you guys did to put together your Return to Learn plan?
Well, that would be a question for the bill sponsors that actually have those conversations. I know that there were many, many conversations. I don't know that the individuals actually working with this, I don't know if they did or did not. I was not involved with that, but I can tell you I have been. I know that by listening to what the teachers and the parents, the administrators, superintendents, we've had a great conversations there. And quite often the superintendents will tell me, this is what our teachers' concerns are. Mm-hmm. So for me as a legislator, I know I am staying in touch there, but in regard to the individual whose names are on the bill package, I am not sure.
For deeper into that. So as currently formulated, if this was the final package, you know, you say you send it off to the Senate, whatever, as configured right now, you're in favor of this Return to Learn plan.
I am. There are a couple pieces that I'll be interested to see if they're modified a little bit. So because the bill package deals with this upcoming school year, but it also deals with future years. So there are a couple pieces. I've had some negotiations and a voice at the table in getting some modifications that I just think are right for our kids. When we look at the safety, health, well-being of what's best for the kids, we need to be cognizant of so many pieces, but there's so many unknown factors as we move forward. This bill package, I think, is good. We will see what changes are made in the Senate. And one teacher reached out to me yesterday with a text and said, I understand that your bill package, the legislators' Return to Learn, will cause layoffs. And I said, this does not address funding of schools other than making sure the funding is in place for the PPE that would be needed. That had already been done and in place. I don't know how teachers per se would be laid off because of this plan. A teacher could be laid off if the students don't come back to school, right?
I mean, sure.
If home learning is taking place. But if distant learning is taking place, that distant learning could be a packet, a work packet. It could be e-learning. It could be the tablet that they got from school. Another conversation is about, we don't have broadband at home. What's that going to look like? Well, a tablet or an electronic device could be loaded with the software it's needed at school. And then that tablet is just taken home and the assignment is completed there. And then just when the tablet comes back to school, a teacher could grade it that way. So we know our teachers are innovative. We know each community needs to be different. But in regard to, you know, teachers being laid off, this does not address that package. Some were concerned, and amendments were made in this package the last moment, that if e-learning was taking place, so if students were learning away from that actual school building, that a school district could outsource those teachers. Maybe that's where the fear came in, that they were going to lose their jobs. And we put clarification in our legislation that same teacher that works with that student in class would be the teacher working with them out of class as well. So districts may choose what they refer to as a hybrid, a little bit of in class, a little bit of out class, by taking that classroom, dividing that enrollment in half, allowing half the kids to come in a couple of days, the other students to come in two of the other days, one day for cleaning and or virtual learning, something of that nature. We can come up with solutions that way.
What's the time frame on getting to the Senate and getting back and before we start seeing a vote and, yes. and something for the governor to sign?
Great question. So the Senate will be taking it up next week. We will be taking it up the following week. So that first week in August, we'll be back in Lansing, and we should be able to get this wrapped up and put it on the governor's desk. She can choose not to sign it. She can choose, as she has complete control with the use of her executive orders, she can modify her executive orders or leave them as they stand right now, and this could all be null and void. But to me, the bottom line is we still need to be working on finding solutions. I just mentioned earlier the immunity from a civil action for healthcare workers. We're talking about that for business owners as well during this pandemic. So we as legislators need to be working, although we don't have the ability because of the emergency times we are in, we don't have the full ability. We don't have any involvement or say in her executive orders. Mm-hmm. We still need to be doing the work of the people.
I agree with that for sure, and I think the people will be glad to know that it's happening that way. Any last thoughts before we call it a day?
No, I just, again, I always appreciate the individuals reaching out to us. We have got a lot of important issues moving forward, and hearing from you allow me insight. One of the individuals that has been very frustrated with a claim that is not accurate on their unemployment insurance that has kept him from receiving the money that he has been promised, over $4,000, and he had to go through the courts to get it. It was finally adjudicated. And he said to me, well, shouldn't I get interest on that? If I owed the government money, I'd have to pay them interest. And, you know, when people present questions like that, they seem kind of common sense questions to me. So we'll start investigating that a little bit and looking into, you know, what that looks like. But it's hearing from the people that make me a better legislator, and honored and so privileged to be serving this community.
So how can the people get in touch with you, Julie?
My office number, 517-373-1795. My office email, and again, if it's an unemployment insurance question or issue, the best way to reach us is just directly emailing us at julialexander@house.mi.gov. And of course, my personal cell phone number, always available to give me a call, send me a text. My personal cell number, 517-740-9982.
64th District State Rep. Julie Alexander. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.